It's possible in rare instances to follow another norm, to approach the law of karma in a very different way that challenges a lot of our presuppositions about the way religious life works. I call this the extraordinary norm. This is open only to a few people, or shall we say chosen only by a few people. It may very well be open to everybody, but only a few people choose it. According to this norm, someone would attempt to perform no action. Not good action, not bad action, but no action at all. Either good or bad. And the goal of this mode of action, this extraordinary norm, is not to get a better rebirth, not to kind of win on the scale of transmigration or reincarnation, but to get no rebirth at all and bring the cycle of transmigration completely to an end. It's a very distinctive idea, as you can see, just to bring the cycle of transmigration to an end. This state of no rebirth, the end of the cycle of samsara, is called commonly in Hindu literature moksha. That means liberation, so you'll hear it referred to that way often in the religious literature of India. Buddhists refer to it as nirvana. So this, of course, is the great goal that the Buddha was seeking in his meditative and contemplative life, to seek nirvana, the end of the cycle of transmigration. Once a person has achieved this state, once you get there is no return in the cycle of death and rebirth. That means it's permanent. It doesn't slip away from you. So if you want a solution to the problem of samsara, this is what you got to do. You got to find some way to bring this cycle completely to an end. Now, if you think about this, with these two norms, then, come two very distinctive styles of life in Indian society. Two very different ways you can live as a religious person in Indian civilization. People who follow the ordinary norm situate themselves in a network of duties and responsibilities. They live the life of ordinary people. They're mothers, fathers, teachers, students, priests, kings, and they're bound by all the rules that govern these social roles. People who follow the extraordinary norm renounce all of this. And I use the word renounce here in really a technical sense. They give it all up. They engage in an act of renunciation so that these duties no longer apply to them and they no longer occupy any distinctive place in the established structure of Hindu society. In other words, they really turn their back on all the social duties that would normally accrue to someone in that world. These renunciants, they're called by various names. Sannyasi is one. It's commonly used in the Hindu tradition, although it could be used for Buddhists as well. Buddhists refer to bhikshus, the word we translate as monk. It originally meant simply to beg. Or bhikshuni, a nun, a woman who has engaged in the same act of renunciation. They have very few possessions. They beg for their food, and they live lives that are deliberately simple in order to escape the network of karma that ties them in the cycle of samsara. Now, you might find it interesting to attempt to visualize for yourself what somebody like this would look like. I've given an abstract description to you of the possibility of sannyasa. What does it look like to meet a sannyasi on the street, and what would it be like to try to become a sannyasi for yourself? The story that I often use to introduce students to this ideal in Indian life is one that I think is in some ways a little bit odd, but is rather distinctive and amusing. There was a man once, let's start out with once upon a time, there was a man named Leopold Fischer, who was born and grew up in Vienna in Austria before the Second World War, and he showed an unusual aptitude for Indian languages. I'm sure he must have imagined, or others might have imagined for him, that this was the result of some previous connection with that great civilization. Anyway, he came of age during the Second World War and joined the Nazi army, the army of the Third Reich, and was assigned to the Indian Legion to defend the Normandy beachhead against the invasion by the Allied forces. He was captured with his Indian troops and was repatriated. I put this word in quotation marks. He was sent with his troops back to India, even though he had never actually lived there himself. And when he got to India, he tried to imagine what to do. Now he was there, and he could speak the languages and was at home with his Indian troops. He went up to Benares on the Ganges and tried to find a teacher who would initiate him as a sannyasi. Initially, his attempts to do this were not terribly successful because people were reluctant to initiate foreigners into this institution, into this style of life. But he found, finally, someone who would do this for him. So the guru, the teacher, took him down to the Ganges, to the bank of the Ganges, to the cremation ground where the bodies are burned along the shore of the river during the dark of the moon. And he asked him to go through a very simple ritual that involved, in effect, a ritual death.